You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Cavaliers, a member of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Carter Rodriguez, and as you may have noticed, my name is not Chris Manning, who is out of town the next couple days, so I'll be filling in. I'm a staff writer and a news editor at Fear the Sword, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Cavs-Pacers game from Wednesday night. Pacers took a 103-93 win in this one against a Cavaliers roster that could be best described as a skeleton crew. LeBron James was not active. He got his first rest night of the season. J.R. Smith still hasn't recovered from that ankle injury. And Mike Dunleavy got the quietest DNP of all time for what appears to be rest based on Jason Lloyd's column. But it really wasn't announced beforehand, to my knowledge. No one really talked about it, and maybe that's a reflection of Dunleavy's contributions so far for the Cavs, which have obviously been underwhelming. But we can move pretty much straight in to the three takeaways for this game. And the first one is that the Cavs didn't have as much quit in them as usual. When the Cavaliers play without LeBron James historically, or in this return era, you can normally expect about 5 to 10 minutes of effort, and once the team gets up double digits, the team just decides collectively, all right, well, we tried. We're not going to win without LeBron. And then they sort of pack it in. And this game was kind of marked by them not doing that. Every time the Pacers started to push it to 11, 12, 13-point margin, the Cavs answered back in kind and brought it within 4 or 5. And unfortunately, and they had it within 6. It was 90-84 with about 6 minutes left when Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love kind of played their first action of the fourth quarter, which tells you something on its own head that they missed, that both of their best and probably only useful scorers for the night weren't playing for the first entire half of the fourth. But they were only down 6 when they came in, and then the Pacers made a little run and the game got away from them. But still, from a Cavs perspective, it was nice to see the team actually battle and fight. The defense was not great. They have a really hard time when they don't have JR on the floor, I think, because they can't sick Shumpert on opposing point guards to disrupt the point of attack the way they like to. JR is one of their quicker, more athletic wings, which is so funny. And then, of course, LeBron not being out there really hurts the defense. It's funny because, you know, everyone maligns LeBron's defensive effort, and often rightfully so. You know, like the guy, you can literally watch him giving up on plays while they're happening, even when he could have absolutely made a play. But all the on-off numbers tend to suggest that the guy's still a really impactful defender, just in terms of the distance he's able to cover with relative ease. His weak side stealing ability is still unbelievable. He adds a layer of rim protection that most small forwards do not add, and that's really especially valuable when you're playing bigs like Kevin Love and Channing Frye, who aren't necessarily the quickest on their feet. So the Pacers were able to shoot 50% from the field, 36% from three. Didn't foul much, which probably kept the Cavs in the game. They had 9 extra free throws. However, they went 12 of 20 at the line, so I suppose maybe not. probably have to do better than that when you're shorthanded like this. In terms of positives, Kevin Love was unreal in this game, and we'll get back to him later. But he posted 27-16, and this is the kind of line you want to see him have on a day LeBron's not playing. This is something that I think we've all kind of this version of Kevin Love is something we've all been waiting for a while. Is you know. Super role player with LeBron and Kyrie on the floor, but capable of taking over when those guys aren't on or are literally are not playing. And 27 points and 16 boards on 23 shots. That's what you like to see, even if you only went 1 of 4 at the line. Kyrie Irving had another good game. This is just like such a Kyrie game. It didn't feel noteworthy. He had 24 points on 20 shots and 7 assists and 2 turnovers. This is just like, so Kyrie, his 3-point shot kind of abandoned him a little bit. He only won 1 of 5 from distance. But the 7 assists were nice to see, and that's something that everyone kind of wrings their hands about, is Kyrie's pure point guardiness. But we found that his assist rate typically goes way up when LeBron's not on the floor. Duh. LeBron has the ball a lot, and really there aren't a lot of assists to go around. And that actually is also reflected in Kevin Love's stats this year. I think he's averaging about 1 assist a game right now, 1.4 assists per game right now, which is well below his career averages because LeBron has just been even more than usual, a total and complete hub for what this offense does. On the downside for this team, obviously they fought, but their role players did not have good games, and they really need LeBron to facilitate for them. Iman Shumpert went 1 of 6. Channing Frye went 3 of 9. Those guys have kind of been the heroes of the season so far for the Cavs, the unsung heroes. Richard Jefferson went 2 of 6. Tristan Thompson went 1 of 2. Jordan McRae went 3 of 12. How he got 12 shots up in 24 minutes. Good for you, bud. The role players, they're not unbelievably good athletes, and they're not unbelievably good creators. So you really, really feel their degradation when LeBron's not out there. Channing Frye gets nothing but wide open buckets with LeBron on the floor, and a lot more of his shots were contested tonight. Iman Shumpert has 2 assists and 3 turnovers while trying to take on more playmaking duty. Kay Felder has to play. So LeBron's absence, really defines the game, and that's kind of when people poke at the Cavaliers roster without LeBron, like, oh, they never went without him. They wouldn't even be a playoff team without him. Well, that's kind of missing the point, even though I think people that say that is wrong, that are wrong. Because LeBron, David Griffin has that quote about how you have to be very careful about who you put around LeBron and who gets to have the ball in their hands. And that's a really salient point. LeBron dominates the ball, especially when it matters. LeBron dominates the ball. So you need complementary players around him. You need guys who know how to move without the ball, that can spot up, shoot, that can play good team and individual defense. You don't need a bunch of Evan Turners out there, guys who can, create a shot, but who cares? So it's going to look bad more often than not when he's not out there, because this team is completely tailored around his skill set. And, oh, by the way, this team construction won a title. So I think the Cavs are very validated with the way they've built this team. And that's all for point one. Moving on to the second, kind of key takeaway for the game. The kids are not ready on this team. I think going into the season, as a fan base, it makes sense to look through rose-colored glasses at rookies like a rookie like Kay Felder and a young wing like Jordan McRae, and you read the preseason articles and you think that these guys are going to be ready, but you know, in some cases, most kids can't contribute to a title team, especially not most 5'9 kids who don't have a reliable 3-point shot yet. Kay had an okay line in this game. He had 9 points, went 2 of 4 from the field, 5 of 6 at the line, a couple assists, a couple boards. But it's still just going to be really hard for him to carve out room in this rotation, especially without a reliable jump shot. I think that the Cavaliers genuinely believe in the kid, and I genuinely think that they have plans for him down the line, but I don't think those plans really involve him being a contributor this year. I still think they need to sign a backup point guard, just in case Kyrie, you know, has to miss a game here or there, or if they want to rest him here or there. Like, they really don't have a system in place to rest the kid without playing Felder extended minutes or playing Shumpert extended minutes at the two and then having to shift everyone down. You know, like, Richard, like, being stuck with Shumpert as your nominal backup point guard also damages your flexibility in a way because, like, Richard Jefferson started at the two guard against the Raptors. You know, like, you'd really rather have Shumpert there, but you can't play Shumpert as your starting two and your start in your backup one, and have him be able to fulfill both those roles well without giving him a break. So Felder, I really do believe in him, and I think that, you know, almost everyone who is drafted, like with the 54th pick or whatever it was of the draft, doesn't work out. You are absolutely taking wild swings at that stage in the draft. The Cavs have the infrastructure to develop someone like Felder, which is nice. But, you know, I just think it's important to note that with these guys that get picked, it's especially late. It's more likely that they're not NBA players than it is likely that they're NBA players, especially rotation players on good teams. That's unbelievably hard to do. And most people just don't find people. Like, most players don't turn into players there. And that's okay. That doesn't mean Felder can't turn into one, but he's got to expand his tool bag a little, especially he's got to shoot threes. He's not Isaiah Thomas quick. He's an unbelievable leaper, but he is not as quick as these other 5'9", 5'10 superstars that we've seen pop out of the woodwork. He's not Nate Robinson in terms of his explosiveness and getting that first step. So he has to have people respect his jumper, or he's not going to be able to get to the rim. And his in-between game that I think we saw him flash in summer league in preseason, it's a lot harder to demonstrate that on a team like the Cavaliers, because I'm sorry, I don't care how good Kay Felder's floater is. If he hits it like 42% of the time, that's not a shot the Cavs are going to look to create. They have LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love. They have J.R. Smith and Channing Frye. That's just, these aren't shots that are valuable enough within the context of this Cavaliers roster. So a 3-point shot probably needs to be priority numero uno. I like the way he battles defensively, tries not to die on screens, and is a rugged defender. The Cavs have done a good job of putting him in the spots where he can succeed. He's gotten the most burn against fellow very small guards, like Aaron Brooks today. Felt like most of his minutes were matched up on Aaron Brooks, who's not an inch taller than 6 feet. But yeah, it's just going to be a process with him, and I really, really doubt that this guy ends up helping this team win a title on the court. And that's no slight to him. I think he's going to be a nice player if things break right. Moving over to the other young man, Jordan McRae, the guy who got just a ton of hype this summer for some reason. He was being referred to as Jamal Crawford-esque by the team. And it seems to be pretty clear that they were trying to build his trade value up to see if someone would take a wild swing on the guy. He doesn't really seem to have an NBA skill set. He is kind of a volume scorer, but he's not really good enough to be a volume scorer at the NBA level, at the D-League level, or at the Summer League level. Sure, he can lead your offense, but the NBA is really hard. People are really, really good in the NBA. I mean, that's not, that shouldn't be news, but at the same time, like, I think it's easy to forget, like, oh, this guy scored 60 points in a D-League game. He can probably at least get 20 for us here. And it's just, he's not particularly explosive. His jumper isn't unbelievably silky, and he's not a great playmaker. So it's kind of, you know, like, it goes back to, on a championship team, this guy just doesn't really have a spot. It's really hard to justify putting the ball in his hands, and he kind of needs the ball in his hands. So I don't foresee Jordan McRae playing a role for this Cavaliers team either. DeAndre Liggins got 27 minutes of action. Yeah, 51 minutes for DeAndre Liggins and Jordan McRae. That kind of shows you what kind of game this was. He's fine. He just feels like an end-of-the-bench guy and probably won't turn into more than that. And, you know, that's a lot of guys make good careers playing professional basketball, being at the end of benches and kind of hopping from team to team on 1 years and partially guaranteed contracts. And that looks like DeAndre Liggins. And not to be too harsh, but I think that's kind of Jordan McRae's most likely on-court future as well. All right, so let's just move to player of the game. To me, I think it's Kevin Love. It was just really nice to see this confident, very self-assured version of Kev that we just didn't see much early. Whether it was, you know, learning how to fit around LeBron or fit out, if you want to make that joke for the 400th time, or last year he was rehabbing all summer, so he came into camp much lighter than he wanted to. This was really the first summer that Kevin Love has gotten to prepare for a season the way Kevin Love wanted to prepare. And it's showing. The confidence in his game. I was talking to Chris about this on a recent show on Locked On. I was guesting, not hosting. I was a guest, not hosting. But Love, he's taking these really confident shots. And it's all, like, not to pull a Bill Simmons here, but the body language is so much better. He looks 1,000 times more confident, and he looks, you know, he doesn't look like he's terrified he's going to miss, and then they won't give him the ball again. And that kind of confidence goes a long way for anyone who's ever played pickup with people who won't give you the ball again after you miss your first shot. Like, it's not good for your psyche, and it doesn't lead to you making great plays. And Love is clearly getting more confident. You know, he has a real plan in the post. He's been slipping screens really well. The mid-range jumper is looking really, really nice. He only got to the line for 4 free throw attempts tonight, but overall he's been getting to the line really, really well. I think about 8 a game, which is significantly higher than what he's done as a Cavalier thus far. He's taking a ton more shots around the rim, and I think that's a good thing for him. The three-pointer was on tonight. He went 4 of 10 from distance. And really, I think, even though Kyrie had a great game too, I think Love really helped keep the Cavs in it in a way that, you know, going back to that first takeaway of how the Cavs normally give up on games without LeBron pretty quick, he kind of didn't allow that to happen along with Irving. And, I mean, 27-16, that's a Minnesota Kevin Love line. And it's fun to see those every now and again, so he can remind everyone that, hey, assholes, I'm really, really, really good. So Kevin Love is our player of the game. But let's move over to some wine and gold winners. The LeBron James is my first wine and gold winner, even though he didn't play. He just It just shows you how much he does for this team when he's not there. And you can sense it also when he's on the bench just during a game, getting his normal rest, how the flow of the offense really falls off. It's just so clear that this team is built around his special, special skills. And it's crazy to me the way he enables these role players that just, you know, they don't have a clue what to do once they don't have him out there, you know. Like, these are good players. These are good pros. But you just become accustomed, I think, to getting spoon-fed the easiest buckets of your life. Tristan Thompson gets the easiest offensive rebounds when three guys have tried to contest LeBron at the rim. It's just a bunch of stuff that, you know, you don't always you can't always, you know, put onto numbers, but just the gravitational pull of the attention that he requires for defenses is something that just is so apparent when he's not out there. And I think that, you know, I've joked that this season is the reappreciation tour for LeBron James. Everyone kind of realized, oh yeah, this guy's still the greatest player in the world, and he's awesome. We should really take note of that. And just in that spirit, you know, I think he's in a DNP dash rest. He is a Wine and Gold winner. Oh, and he also just donated $2.5 million to the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History, which is pretty freaking cool. Most athletes, I wouldn't say most athletes, that's not fair. A fair amount of athletes set up their charities as a tax shelter. It's just a thing they do. They're not really passionate about them. LeBron donates so much money for charity. He's putting thousands of kids through college in Akron. And not just saying, here's a scholarship, you figure it out, stupid. He has programs that are helping kids from early education, and we all know that that's all the studies show that's where the education gap really starts, is early on, and then it only widens, and he's not letting people fall behind. He's just, I mean, you just really have to appreciate the kind of philanthropist he's become, and really putting his money where his mouth is with regards to charity. I think that that's something to be commended, and something. And it's a good example for other athletes and just other obscenely rich people to follow. And it's very rewarding to see and good to see. Second Wine Gold winner is Tyronn Lue. Tyronn Lue is having a really interesting season. Just a couple games ago, he closed out a lineup with Jordan McRae, Mike Dunleavy. Maybe it was Mike Dunleavy. An all-bench lineup with LeBron James. He just played the entire fourth with them. And it's like, what are you doing? And then in what was a very close game against the Pacers, he doesn't bring Kyrie Irving or Kevin Love in until 6 minutes left in the game. I'm calling him a Wine and Gold winner because it's very clear that Tyronn Lue is insanely self-assured, and he is very clearly experimenting and playing around with the roster he has. He's going to, in a game that he's not afraid to lose a game to experimentation. And I think that's the kind of mentality you should have as a coach. You can't kind of pull a Bulls era Tom Thibodeau and kill all your best players to try to win every game in this league. I think we've all kind of found that doesn't work. And even if it does work, it takes a toll on your guys. And it doesn't develop alternative routes for winning. It's really good to have a game where you really test certain players in your roster to do stuff that they're not accustomed to doing. So I just wanted to give a little shout out to Lou for that, for kind of playing the long game and understanding that that the Cavaliers season doesn't hinge on a Pacers game where you're resting three rotation players. And then finally, last Wine and Gold winner is Miles Turner. This kid is so freaking fun to watch. He had 12, 8, and 4 in the game. Not an obscene stat line. 6 of 11 from the field. But you can just watch this kid for 5 minutes and realize his immaculate future. In one of the best draft classes I've ever seen. He's going to be like the 7th best player in it. But he's an unbelievably quick jumper. Even if you get him up off his feet on a pump fake, he immediately follows it with another jump, with an effortless jump to swat you. He's got obscenely long arms that, I can't tell you how many times in the last 2 years I've watched the Cavs, take it to the hoop for what appears to be kind of a no-doubter easy layup, and Turner's just there. His arms end up getting into the frame, and he just swats the crap out of the ball. And then on the other end of the ball, his jumper just looks really nice. He's got nice touch on the shot. He has 3-point range, even though he doesn't always show it. And that's probably for the best. He's probably not ready to be a volume 3-point shooter as a big. And then he can handle on the pick and roll and yam it. And then he's got a nice little face up, high release point, quick release jumper that you can really out of the post that you can really see developing into a go-to move. So that's my final wine and gold winner. Overall thoughts: the Cavs move to 9-2 on the season. They will face off with the Detroit Pistons on Friday. I'll have a preview podcast with my good friend and coworker Michael Kruiser, who is one of the smartest NBA people I know, even though he's not an active voice. Probably one of the only people who watches more NBA basketball than I do. So we'll have him on to preview the Pistons game and see if the Cavaliers can move to 10-2 on the season. That's all for today's episode of Locked On Cavs. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Audio Boom, however you listen. Leave a review if you can. Don't forget, we need mailbag questions, so you can hit me up on Twitter at Carter Shade. You can hit Chris up on Twitter at CWM Writes. Thanks for listening.